Hello, everybody, and welcome into Young Lads, episode 14 of our little baseball podcast. Peter DeFee Jr. here alongside Harris Eisenberg. Harris, first off, how have you been doing since our last podcast, which was the day before or the day of the trade deadline?
Life's good. The Yankees are still terrible. Peoria Chiefs have won 8 in a row. So, you know, can't complain.
Yeah, I mean, I got some Little League World Series on in the background, which I don't know if you're a big Little League World Series guy, but I love the Little League World Series.
Yeah, once it gets to, like, you know, once everything moves to Williamsport, that's when I really start watching it. I don't know what stage it's at right now. I think they're at, like, some regional play or something. But yeah, no, I do enjoy the Little League World Series. I like the whole atmosphere around it. Something that, you know, I'm sure you and I both tried to compete for when we were youngsters. So yeah, I mean, I do enjoy watching it.
I actually, short story, and then we'll get into it. I actually won our district championship for my Little League when I was 12 years old through a complete game, two runs, 55 pitches in 6 innings. And we won 10-2.
Wow.
And went on the sectionals. Yeah. It still gets talked about, too, at my Little League, which is really funny, considering that, that was 11 years ago? No, that's longer than that now. 13 or 14 years ago. So I had a little humble brag there for my second. Oof. But talking about atmosphere,
yeah,
I'm sure the atmosphere in Cleveland was electric after the Jose Ramirez and Tim Anderson fight, which we got to get a little bit into. I don't know. Did you see John Boy's breakdown of it yet? Because he posted it today.
Literally just watched it before I came up here to go record. Yeah.
So what are your initial first thoughts on the whole fight?
I mean, Jose Ramirez knocked Tim Anderson out cold. I thought it was brilliant. I didn't understand how it all started because I guess like the main camera angle kind of cuts off Ramirez and Anderson, and then they flash back, and then they're squared up at second base ready to go. So, yeah, I don't know exactly what caused it. I thought Jose Ramirez's slide in the second was fine. Clearly not. But, yeah, I mean, Jose Ramirez knocked him out. Tim Anderson is, in my opinion, is just a clown. I mean, the guy's got no feel for anything that's going on. He goes on Twitter after to try and defend himself. I mean, he's a nutcase. But, I mean, the fight itself, I thought it was great. You know, I think this whole year of baseball has been revolved around, you know, quicker games, a little bit more excitement. Now, that doesn't really factor in the fact that you get two guys squaring up every night. But it's definitely makes for good entertainment. Definitely something I enjoyed, and I bet you a lot of baseball fans enjoyed. And yeah, I think it was just nice to see Tim Anderson kind of get a taste of not what he deserves, but kind of get a little wake up call and just saying, hey, just you got to stop with all these antics, man. I feel like it's been years of antics for Tim Anderson, and this is kind of the guy who the White Sox want to, you know, revolve this, I guess, rebuild around. And it's just not working.
We also got that, and then a couple of days later, or I guess really a day later, it came out that Yasmani Grandal slapped Tim Anderson in the face too, because I guess he wanted to start his All-Star break early because he wasn't in the lineup, so he was going to go leave and be with his family, and Tim Anderson basically just said, F him, like we don't need him, so he went over and slapped him, and Grandal's come out and said that's not true, but I mean, then you have Kenyon Middleton coming out and saying how rookies were sleeping in the bullpen during his time with the White Sox. And you're kind of just looking around and like, what is going on with the White Sox brass? Like, what is going on in Chicago that there's just no – it seems like there's no leadership, and there hasn't been in a while there.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a couple episodes ago. It's like, what on earth is the disaster that they're running there? It just doesn't make any sense how they have all this talent, right? Luis Robert, Eloy, Tim Anderson, Cease, even Giolito before he got traded, and just no one to put it all together. And now you got guys sleeping in the bullpen. I mean, listen, I don't blame him. If you got two games going on in Chicago and the White Sox are playing a day game along with the Cubs, there's going to be no one at that White Sox game. So I understand you falling asleep, but this is the big leagues, man. Like, you can't be falling asleep in the bullpen. Like, that's just that's something you see on the Little League World Series, if possible. You know, not in the big leagues. These guys get paid a load of money to, you know, be part of a baseball team that just is a disaster of a show. They have no idea what they're doing there in Chicago. Yeah, I mean, you want to point the finger at why the Chicago White Sox haven't worked over the last 5 years? It's all on the leadership. It just is.
Yeah, and it's just like they I don't know. It's just that's got to be what's been going on where the White Sox haven't been as competitive as they should be, because there's no reason not to see them up at the top of the AL Central standings. You just said a couple of names: Luis Robert, Tim Anderson, Dylan Cease. They had Lance Lynn. They have Moncada. They have Eloy Jimenez. And so you wonder if that's been the case of why they're just playing the way they're playing, is because there's no structure in their lineup. They try to bring in Tony La Russa. He completely dismantled everything that they tried to build before he got there. And now that he's left, it's like what is there? There's no leadership there. There's nobody steering this ship in the right direction. And they might just have to clean house and just say, hey, listen, we're going to get everybody out of here that's part of this culture and bring in a whole bunch of new faces. And if we suck for 5 years, at least we'll get some top draft picks, and maybe we can change the culture back into what it was in the early to late 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, they don't even – you know, obviously they need a general manager, but they need to go deeper than that. I think they just need, like – you need to hire like a culture consultant or something. I mean, it's just
no. I'm talking about players. I'm talking about
what's
like
going on in the organization. Oh yeah, that too. Obviously, yeah. But it just shows a lack of that. Nobody cares in the organization. You know, Tim Anderson's out there playing for himself. I mean, look at his numbers this year. He's terrible. I think he's got what, one home run still, and he just hit it like a couple of weeks ago, maybe right after the All-Star break. I don't know. I'm trying to pull up his baseball reference page, but. Yeah, he's got a homer and 19 RBIs, and is hitting .242 in 88 games. This is a dude who was an all-star the last 2 years and led the league in hitting in 2019. Like, where's this guy gone? They don't care. I mean, the White Sox just paid, like, Yasmani Grandel is out there just collecting a check. You know, good for him, I guess. Giolito, we all knew was going to be gone. It's like nobody comes and wants to sign with the White Sox. Benintendi probably came here and is just like, damn it. You know, like, why did I do this to myself? Because, like, look at the organizations Benintendi came from. Came from the Red Sox, winners, Yankees. Yeah, they hold people accountable. Maybe not this year, but yes, they are known for holding people accountable. So, you know, it's just bad. It's bad. I mean, they are baseball's boys club.
Yeah, and what from, you know, what we think is one dysfunctional organization to another that looks like their ownership is dysfunctional. I'm going to let you talk about this because you have more experience in the play-by-play department than I do, at least for baseball, and how to go about making game notes and broadcasting on TV and everything. But the whole Baltimore Orioles situation where John Angelos has basically suspended Kevin Brown indefinitely from being the play-by-play broadcaster for the Orioles, basically because he said, hey, listen, the Orioles haven't had much success at Tropicana Field these last couple of years. They've won three games so far this season. They had three wins against them all of the last three seasons combined. So it's like, you know, he's speaking, he's telling the truth as far as what has been going on between the Orioles and the Rays, and they suspended him indefinitely. So I just wanted to get your take on that, being that, you know, basically that's what you're doing now. You are calling games for an organization, and you have to play basically both sides. You have to be their supporter, but then if they're not doing well, you kind of have to tell the fans that, hey, they're not doing well right now.
So before I dive into it, I'll just kind of say my just stereotypical way about going about a broadcast anywhere that I am. It's just, you know, the repertoire with me and the coaches that I work with is that, listen, I'm going to be honest about what's going on the field. You know, team's playing good, great, we're going to praise them. But if the team's bad, I'm going to tell you why they're playing bad. You know, that's every broadcaster, you know. In terms of this Kevin Brown situation, well, there's just so many reasons why this is dead wrong. First of all, the stats that he was saying were in the game notes, which, you know that just as well as I do, the PR department for those organizations make the game notes, the full-on packet. Now, other individuals may do their own prep, but it was reported that the actual physical game note packet for the game itself, which is made by the communications and the public relations departments for any organization in Major League Baseball, that those stats were in the notes. So that's one. Two, those graphics get made in advance. That graphic was either made, 2 hours before the game. It could have been made, 2 days before the game. It probably was made 2 days before the game because it was stating records that were happening last year. So, I know when I do it for ESPN Plus, I sit down with our director and our producer. Our graphics are done days before the games. So it's not like this just comes up in a flash. Like, they knew that this was happening. So if you're going to suspend Kevin Brown, you got to suspend the entire public relations department. You got to suspend the producer, which doesn't make any sense because the information that he was saying was a fact. It was the truth. And not only was it the truth, but it tells the story of the 2023 Baltimore Orioles and their turnaround from the years of just agony and defeat. If anything, Kevin Brown was complimenting the Orioles. There was not a single bad thing that was said in that entire open. So, that whole fact that stat, that graphic essentially tells the story of how good the Orioles have been playing this year and compared to years past is just bizarre to me that the organization thought it was right to suspend him. And I heard some other details, too, about how, Angelos and the ownership is very picky. You know, the Orioles don't really have a number one play-by-play guy, if you've noticed. They have multiple guys who revolve in and out as their play-by-play guy. I know when we were there, we saw two different play-by-play men for their TV. They're mandated to wear Baltimore Orioles gear. I mean, Peter, the polo Kevin Brown was wearing in the open was the same polo that you had for the Rays. Maybe a little bit more flashy, but, it's the same exact polo. You never see Dwayne Stats or Brian Anderson wearing a polo like that. You never saw Dave wearing a polo like that. He always came in a Hawaiian shirt. It's just crazy, the restrictions that you're putting on your broadcast, censoring of the broadcast. I mean, Michael Kay and Gary Cohen, as a New Yorker, I watch those two guys the most. You know, they're never censored. They're going to tell you the truth. Like last year when Joey Gallo's hitting .159 over his year with the Yankees, yeah, we're going to say that because it's the truth. I just don't understand how you can reprimand somebody for saying facts. It's bizarre, and it just casts a cloud over an Orioles organization that we've been praising over the last 5 months, and now it's just, casts a cloud at how soft they are.
Yeah, and that was the big thing. And that's what a lot of the, rival broadcasters were saying, or a lot of the other teams' broadcasters were saying. Even Jason Benetti kind of made a joke, the White Sox have lost 3 of the last 4. It's like, I hope I don't get suspended by the Orioles. And everybody was coming to the defense of Kevin Brown, just talking about, how good of a broadcaster he is. And he is. I've listened to some of the games that he's had on MLB Network when the Orioles are playing, the Twins or whatever. And he's a good broadcaster. So the fact that you're not allowing – it'd be different if – it's all how you word things. It'd be different if he just went out of his way to give you a stat that just either wasn't true or he was trying to play up as to, hey, I'm going to be really negative in this segment. And even if that's the case, then you can't censor him like you were saying about that, because the Orioles are 0-15-1 in the last couple of series that they've played at Tropicana Field prior to the one that they played – in June. And it's like, that's a fact that you can use to show fans how good they've been this year instead of how bad they've been in previous years. So it's all how you spin it. He never spun it in a negative light. He was trying to tell you how, hey, The last couple of years haven't been so good, but this year the Orioles have been so good that they've kind of exercised their demons against against the Rays at Tropicana Field. So that's the thing. You're also right with it being in the game notes. If that's the case, then the PR department who works for the team has to be suspended, something has to happen to them, also the communications department, because those are the two departments that go hand in hand in creating these game notes. I mean, we had special access to our PR and communications department as far as who made the game notes, so we know how good they are and how much detail they put into these game notes. And if they're half as good as the Rays communications and PR team are, then you know they're going to have really good game notes, and they're going to try to put everything in there so that the broadcasters have everything at their disposal. Because you can't just go on a broadcast and say, hey, like, you know, even though Joey Gallo's batting 159, he's playing a great defense, and he's been so good for us this year, and blah, 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 blah. And then the fans are sitting back saying, yeah, but he can't hit anything. He's striking out 300 times. He's made three errors the last three games. It's like, why are we being so condescending, basically? So it's a fine line that broadcasters have to walk, but at the end of the day, you have to let them broadcast the game. You have to let them tell the fans how it is. You can't just be all rainbows and sunshine every time.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there was just no line crossed. I mean, he didn't even teeter the line. What he said was a compliment of the Baltimore Orioles. He brought up the past. Yeah.
Who had been bad the story of the
2023 team. Yeah, yeah. I mean, your whole job as a broadcaster is to tell the story of the Baltimore Orioles. And there's no 2023 Orioles without being a horrible baseball team the last 5 years, because it's been a whole rebuild. So, yeah, that's on the ownership. But also, I'll say this one thing. So the PR department makes the notes, right? Obviously, Kevin Brown may have an inkling of what the records are at Tropicana Field. But when he walks in that day and highlights in the notes, 0-15-1, the notes are what's telling him to say, hey, I want to make that graphic hours in advance and say it on the broadcast. So it's not necessarily his words. Yes, they are his words, but it's a thought that came from somewhere else. So both, I guess, should be reprimanded. And honestly, I think the way that the broadcaster community and all the fans have come together to defend Kevin Brown, I mean, I really do hope that he's back sooner rather than later, because, I mean, you know what it is when the broadcaster gets suspended indefinitely. I mean, we saw it with, you know, Tom Brenneman. Yeah, he said a word that should shun you for life on the air, but, I mean, his technical term was that he was suspended indefinitely. You know, so, I mean, who knows what suspended indefinitely means, but this guy should not lose his job because he did his job.
Yeah, and I mean, you're also talking about the Orioles that have had a couple of, like, broadcaster fiascos, I guess, with, not John Miller. Oh my gosh, what's his name?
Well, I mean, John Miller was one of them.
John Miller was one of them, but it was the other one.
John Miller was one of them.
Oh, I can see his face, but I can't remember his name. But, they've had kind of these broadcaster fiascos, for lack of a better term, in the last couple of years. And it's the whole thing is, too, is that it's shining a very bad light now on the Orioles, who are in first place in the AL East by three games. They have the best record in the American League. They have one of the best catchers in baseball. They have one of the best prospects in baseball. No, they had the best prospect in baseball, because Jackson Holliday is the number one prospect. So instead of getting all of these, you know, flowers for all of this other stuff that they have the best young core, they have, you know, one of the best, you know, young middle infielders. They're getting, you know, basically this light shined on suspending a broadcaster for saying, hey, the Orioles haven't been that good against the Rays and at Tropicana Field these last couple of years, but look at how good they're doing now. Look at how all of that development has turned into a first place team in 2023. And it's a shame that that's what happened last night.
Yeah, just an absolute disgrace, honestly. Just it's really cool to see that everyone's kind of revolving around it. You know, I thought Gary Cohen was brilliant in his defense of Kevin Brown last night. Jason Benetti, the joke was hilarious. He's great. He's an all-timer. I think it's cool to see the community just kind of rally around him. And we'll see what comes out of this. You know, I do hope and I do think because of the bonding together that he'll be back sooner rather than later. But who knows? And I hope the Orioles can figure it out because they have been one of the best stories in all of baseball.
I mean, if not, he's going to go to another team and just be a really good broadcaster that's going to stick with the team for a long time. I mean, you know, just to put up the Rays. I know Dwayne is thinking about retiring in the next couple of years. Maybe he is retiring. I don't know if he's retiring at the end of this year, but I know he's been taking a lot more time off. So, I mean, once he retires, maybe, who knows, Kevin Brown takes his spot. I'd love to listen to him for, you know, 100 and what, they broadcast 140 games, I think, on Bally. I think. But anyways.
Something like that. I mean, they're going to go bankrupt soon, so who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. But, I mean, it's just a shame that that's what, you know, that's what's surrounding the Baltimore Orioles now. But I want to get into this, too, because I know last week we kind of forgot to mention him again, but you wanted to talk about Domingo Germán. I don't know if you still remember what you were going to say about him, but the whole last year – or last week was – he was suspended from the team, or he was going to rehab because he got, you know, completely drunk in the clubhouse before his start, or before his supposed start against the Rays, which made him come out of the bullpen, and he went the last four or five innings. But do you remember what you were going to say about Domingo Germán? I just wanted to bring that up just in case you had something to touch on, because we can just touch on the Yankees as a whole, too, because now Rodon is back on the IL, and things are just going completely south for a team that thought that once they got Nestor Cortez and Loaisiga back and Rodon was healthy, that, you know, maybe they make a couple of trades for bullpen pieces and who knows, they make a run at the playoffs. But it looks like they're going to be missing the playoffs for the first time since, what, 2016? 2014?
Yeah, 2016. Yep, that's correct. The Domingo Germán thing, look, I think we mentioned the armpit incident, but the whole suspended indefinitely was I think was right before we went on our episode. So here's this again. I mean, first of all, the guy should have been off the team after the 2019 season when he got the domestic violence charge. I mean, the dude is abusing his wife in front of teammates in 2019. That should have been your first sign to get him out of there. Then you have this where you have him coming in the clubhouse. He's making jokes. Ron Marinaccio's packing his bags for AAA. He's laughing at him, hammered. I mean, I just – what happened to the accountability and the Yankee way of this ball club? I don't get it. Like, and I said this last time, you know, and I'm going to, you know, say a phrase Michael Kay said at the end of last year. If George Steinbrenner were alive, this would have never, ever happened. Because you have a guy here who has no accountability. Now, I'll give you an example of a similar situation, a guy who did have accountability. In 2015, CeCe Sabathia, at the end of the year, at the end of the regular season, admitted that he had an alcohol problem. What'd he do? He left the team when they were in the postseason, went to rehab, fine. Turned into a great piece, you know, in his late 30s, you know, for those Yankees teams. He was accountable for it. Nobody, Domingo Germán is just not accountable. Now, yeah, he threw a perfect game, yada, 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 whatever. Who cares? You know, again, baseball and organizations all about having good people and good teammates. And clearly, Domingo Germán is just not that. I mean, just the lack of awareness and accountability. Like, was anybody reporting this stuff in the clubhouse? Like, this couldn't have been a first-time instance where he shows up hammered for a game. I mean, just – I just can't believe that this is the show – that this is a Mets thing. This is supposed to be a Mets thing that's going on. But it's happening to the Yankees. It's just unbelievable. There's no words to describe it. That you kept this guy around for years after he abused his wife when, you know, Jimmy Cordero comes in this year. He gets the DV – the domestic violence charges. Boom, they kick him off the team. But with Domingo Germán 4 years ago, it's the same brass. What are we doing? I just don't get it. Like, I didn't understand why he was still on the team after 19. Yeah, he led the team in wins. He led the league in wins that year, actually. But I just – it doesn't make any sense to me. It's mind-boggling that this guy continues to be an issue. Like, even in the years past, like 21 and 22, you just felt like something was going to happen. Like, his weird comments, like you know, when the Yankees came to the Rays last September, how he was talking about, oh, I think Christian Bethencourt's the worst hitter on that team, and he takes him deep. It's just like, how can you say that after a dude hits a homer off of you? Like, it just, I don't even want to go further anymore. The guy's just a joke.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned to you, too, we were talking about maybe Cashman being fired if Steinbrenner was still alive, George, that is. But at this point, I think if you have the controversy that you're having with the Yankees at this point in the season, I think if George Steinbrenner is still alive, everybody's fired. Domingo Germán's kicked off the team. Everybody gets traded. It's a completely different organization. And it's just that, like you said, there it doesn't feel like there's been any accountability. I was listening to John Boy's podcast that he has with Talkin' Jake. And they were just somebody brought up the fact that, hey, like, you know, are you going to ask Boone about all these injuries that have happening? And Jake basically just said, listen, like, nobody knows anything. Like, we didn't know Trevino had the wrist injury until June. Nobody was talking about Rizzo and his concussion symptoms for the last 2 months. We weren't talking about, or Boone doesn't know anything or didn't know anything about Germán, or maybe he didn't know. I don't know, but all of these issues that it just seems like nobody either wants to talk about or knows about, it's starting to come to the surface, and it's starting to make the Yankees look really bad. And that is something that you could not say was the case when Steinbrenner was alive and was around. I mean, what was the worst thing that the Yankees had as far as a scandal when Steinbrenner was around? A-Rod taking steroids, getting suspended? I mean, that's the last big thing that I can remember.
I mean, the only real thing, I guess, was when George kind of inflicted a scandal on himself. But even that was owner inflicted, you know? At least he was still able to hold the team accountable, you know? Like Reggie Jackson and Billy Martin. And George Steinbrenner fired Billy Martin 4 times. He hired him 5 times. Why? Because there were times where Billy wasn't accountable. He fired him. Like, right on the spot, boom. Like, you know, the Yankees won the World Series in 77 and 78. Billy Martin wasn't around for the 78 one. He was gone. They fired him in the middle of the year because, you know, he kept getting into it with Reggie Jackson. It's just, it amazes me. Like, is there anything else? I mean, I don't know if there's anything, like, a little bit more recent than that. But, no, there just hasn't because, again, there's a Yankee way. Right? And it's just not there anymore. No accountability. Boone, I mean, he comes on that podcast with John Boy, and he sounds clueless. So it's I just don't get it. I would love to hear, you know, Hal Steinbrenner's thoughts at the end of the year when Michael Kay will probably have him on a show. But, I mean, who knows what's going to go on, man? Like, this is just – it's ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, and I think I've heard Michael Kay this year be more disappointed – in the team that he has been in a long time, just because of either the non-moves that they've made. Like, they didn't go at the deadline and try to do anything spectacular. They got Kenyon Middleton and somebody else, something Rodriguez. I forgot who they got, who else they got. But It's just like the way this team is playing, it just seems like there's no life in them. It doesn't seem like the Yankees of even, you know, early 2010s, you know, mid 2010s. It just seems like a whole new team, and you have to wonder if Hal Steinbrenner, it's in his best nature to say, hey Cashman, hey Boone, thanks for all that you've done, but we have to change something up. We have to do something different, or else we're going to be the worst team in the AL East for a long time, because the Orioles aren't going anywhere. The Rays have been at the top of the division the last, you know, 10 years or so. Maybe more like 6 years. And then the Blue Jays are in the middle of the division all the time. And then, like, the Red Sox are a crapshoot. They're either the last place team or they're winning the World Series. So the Yankees could very well be in the division that basically they built, quote unquote, because they were just so good in the AL East for so long. They could be one of the cellar dwellers for a long time if they don't make some changes.
But that's the thing. The crazy thing is that the brass thinks that this is it. They think that this is the team. And it's clearly not. Like, there's no way that this is the team. They're in last place. And, you know, New Yorkers love to compare crosstown rivals, so I'll do it. The Mets just sold most of everything. I think the Mets are going to be better than the Yankees in 2 years. I really do. I mean, when you get all those prospects to come up and the Yankees don't have any, it's a problem. The Yankees continue to try and build their team through free agency. It doesn't work. They make outlandish trades. It's just – and they're brainwashed. They're really brainwashed that, you know, Aaron Boone keeps coming to the media and they think that this is the team. There's no shot that it is. No way. They'll be in last place forever if they think that's the case.
Yeah, because, I mean, who's the next big thing coming up for the Yankees other than Dominguez? Volpe's already up, and we've seen what he can do. Maybe another year of development, though.
I'd probably say Clayton Beter, and that's it.
And other, if you're not a Yankees fan,
it's
you
like,
don't
okay,
know that
cool.
name.
Like,
if you're because exactly. like if you're exactly. like me, I know who Dominguez is because he's been talked about as one of these revolutionary prospects. But like other prospects in that system, maybe an Austin Wells, and the only reason I know that name is because he took Anthony Volpe out for chicken parm, and Volpe started hitting home runs left and right. But other than that, their farm system is weak. Their major league level is weak. Who in the bullpen do you trust other than Michael King? You just spent $85 million on a guy that's been healthy for all of five starts this year. And we don't know if that back injury is going to be any good. Garrett Cole's not getting any younger. Severino is terrible now. Herman might not be even on the team next year.
He's the worst pitcher in baseball.
Severino, yeah.
I hope he's
got
not.
He's got a 7 ERA right now.
No, well, yeah, Severino's the worst pitcher in baseball, and I do hope Herman's never playing another game for the Yankees again.
It just stinks, too, because Severino in that 2018 to 2020 stretch was one of the better arms that the Yankees had. I mean, he even led the league in wins, I think, 1 year. I think that was in 2018 that he led the league in wins.
Yeah, 18. I'll never forget. Yeah, 2018. I'll never forget. I went to a Subway Series game at Yankee Stadium. It was Severino against DeGrom, and it was electric because at that time, it was the two best pitchers going at it. Severino and DeGrom. It was great. Now it's like, where did Severino go? I mean, DeGrom's hurt. We know that. Severino's just fallen off the face of the earth.
But, I mean, you talk about teams that have no direction in the Chicago White Sox. The Yankees used to never be in that conversation with teams that had no direction, but they have no direction. You don't know which way they're going to go year to year. And it's just – It's weird seeing that from a team that is as legendary as the Yankees are.
Yeah, this is the new low for the Yankees. I mean, this is the lowest they've probably been since probably the 80s.
Oh, and we just got confirmation on MLB postseason schedule. So we're officially in the pennant
yes,
race.
Yes, I did see that.
Would you say that we're officially in pennant race baseball? August 8th.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we keep going, I do want to say this one thing here. Barstool just posted an article. Wrongfully suspended play-by-play man Kevin Brown will return to the O's broadcast booth on Friday. Now again, Barstool is never the first source that I trust, but let's see if we can get something real here. I mean, the whole thing was on CNN. Okay, yeah. So the Baltimore Banner, is the one who released the articles of The Athletic. I think no, just Baltimore Banner. We'll return to the air on Friday. So we won. Yeah,
I mean, I think that's the backlash. I mean, you have people scouring. I don't think that's how you say it. Anyways, I can't even say it right now. But you have people looking all over social media for like what's being said about the team and how the reception of whatever they do is taken. And I'm sure people were going to upper management and saying, "Hey, listen, we're kind of getting dragged through the mud by all these other teams and their broadcasters about what we did to Kevin Brown." It's like, I think we need to lift the suspension. It's been what, 2 or 3 weeks since that Orioles series at the end of June. So it's like, hey, maybe it's a good time to say that, you know, his suspension is up and he's served his time and hopefully he, you know, comes back better than ever, yada, 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 whatever they're going to say in their, you know, press release statement. But I'm pretty sure somebody went up to upper management and was like, hey, listen, like, we got to end this now.
Yeah, had to have for sure. Yeah, so, I mean, hey, good on the Orioles for listening. It's not that hard, but hey, they did. So, you know, everybody who came together in baseball last night, I think, deserves a little pat on the back there because, I mean, they win.
So let's get back to now. Oh, here. Kevin Brown is trending on Twitter. So, and even the Dan Patrick Show. I don't know if you watch that at all, but it's one of my favorite shows. I watch it religiously all the time. He doesn't usually talk about baseball, but he was a studio host for NBC and for Football Night in America and everything. And he's a big sportscaster and everything. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this show will know who Dan Patrick was. He was on SportsCenter for a long time, but he even talked about it. And to get him to talk about something baseball related so close to football season, it's like, listen, like, you did something really wrong. And this is a guy that's been around sports for a really long time that doesn't really give his take too much on baseball other than in the postseason, which, I mean, a lot of broadcasters nowadays that aren't baseball broadcasters do, but it's like, listen, like, it was a very bad look for the Orioles, and hopefully they rectify it and the situation's done and over with. But now, so schedule wise for MLB playoffs, they're going to begin October 3rd, which is a Tuesday. No, I'm sorry, today's Tuesday, which is when they released it. So best of three wild card series begins on October 3rd, and the World Series is set to start on October 27th, with Game 7, if needed, scheduled for November 4th. How far? Who won the World Series last year? The Astros did in Game 6. Do you remember what day that ended on?
The Astros did. Yeah, so I actually remember that Game 7 was actually scheduled for my birthday, which is November 5th. So it either ended on the 4th of November or the 3rd.
So it was the 4th because it ended in Game 6. And they wouldn't have taken a day off in between 6 and 7, so ended up on November 4th. So, again, another late World Series, which I don't mind it. I don't mind a World Series going into November because it's kind of cool. It's like you have a chance of recreating the Mr. November moniker that, you know, that Derek Jeter had when he hit the home run in game five of the 2001 World Series, game four. And that was the latest that a World Series had ever gone into because of what happened in 9/11. So it's pretty cool to have a World Series run this late.
Yeah, I don't hate it at all. I think it's more baseball for us, you know, and I think with the expanded playoffs, they have to push it back this far. Again, a lot of people hate on Rob Manfred, and, you know, one of the good things he did was finally, you know, obliging to this new playoff format, get more teams in there. It's longer. And we all know, like, look, I said this right when we started the podcast, you know, when the WBC just concluded. We're not going to get cool atmospheres again until the postseason. So you have more games, more atmosphere, and it's a win-win for Major League Baseball too because they get to make more money. And honestly, you know, at that time, the World Series is in the middle of football season. So let's just say if you're a lowly Who's a terrible football team? If you're a lowly Detroit Lions fan,
right? Well, Detroit's
not going to make the World Series. Is there a team? Is there a city that has a bad football team and a really good baseball team right now? Kansas
Washington
City.
Washington Commanders, Baltimore bad. Orioles.
Yeah.
Baltimore Orioles,
if you're
and Washington
a fan,
Commanders.
Ravens.
Or Ravens, yeah. There you go.
Well, no, the Commanders are bad too.
But the
I
thought you were trying to say like a bad football team that gets to watch their MLB team. But the Baltimore Ravens are good too, so you're gonna have to pick.
That's what I'm trying to say. So, but let's say, hypothetically,
is that a new segment that we just came up with? Bad football teams and good baseball team cities.
I guess.
Let's see.
Yeah, well, there's no baseball in Vegas yet.
I was gonna say Denver,
Houston.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, Houston Astros.
So are you really going to watch your lowly Texans play week 7, a Sunday 1 o'clock meaningless game with whoever their quarterback is? Or are you going to watch the Houston Astros play in the World Series? And I'm a Houston fan. I'm watching the World Series. So that's kind of the analogy I'm trying to make here. It's like, you know, for the communities who have good baseball teams and bad football teams, there's your avenue to watch good sports in the winter.
It's a new segment that we just came up with. Bad football or bad baseball teams.
I mean, who knows? The Bucks
teams.
Could be bad, you know? The Bucks could be bad. We don't know how Baker Mayfield's going to do, you know?
Miami Dolphins are pretty good, and the Marlins right now are pretty decent. Oh, the Atlanta Falcons?
They're about even.
The Falcons are a good one.
You get an Atlanta-Houston World Series again.
Yeah.
Football may never exist in those two cities.
I'm trying to think of now. I have to think of states that have football teams and baseball teams.
What about Arizona? I mean, Cardinals are not very good.
Yeah, but the Diamondbacks have lost six.
The Diamondbacks are also not very good either.
They might not.
Oh boy! All right.
I don't even know.
San Diego doesn't have a football team anymore.
No, you could say the Chargers and the Angels. Well, no. Well, you could say the Rams and the Dodgers. Would you rather watch the Rams or the Dodgers play?
Yeah. Because the Rams are going to be bad, I think.
Arizona is now 2 games out of the third place wild card spot after losing 6 straight. Miami's a game and a half out after losing 5 straight. And the Chicago Cubs are a game out behind the Cincinnati Reds. San Francisco now leads the wild card.
I think we need to talk about that. Yeah, I think we got to talk about the Cubs here because, I mean, hey, before the deadline, they were a bad week away from trading Bellinger and probably trading Stroman. And now, I mean, they're in it. I mean, I think, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I think the Chicago Cubs team could be one of those teams that gets really, really hot and does some damage in the postseason. I really do think that the Cubs have an opportunity to get scorching hot and go far. Like, look at the Braves in 21. Look at the Phillies last year. Look at the Nationals in 2019. I mean, all teams that were all projected to be bad, and then they go make it to the World Series or win the World Series. I think the Cubs could be one of those teams this year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, all you have to do is get into it. And again, another bad football team, good baseball team. Chicago Bears, Chicago Cubs. Who would you rather watch?
There you go.
Would you rather, you know, Justin Field, you know, run for 300 yards but get sacked 7 times and lose 21-3 or, you know, watch the Cubs. But, yeah.
And it also helps because you got a bad hockey team and bad basketball team too.
Oh, but the hockey team just got the number 1 pick in Bedard.
They're going to be good. Everybody's going crazy about that.
So, they'll be good. So that might be a little different. But yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, all you have to do is just get into the dance and anything can happen. You have Marcus Stroman going probably game 1 of that wild card series, and you have Justin Steele afterwards with a really good lineup with Dansby Swanson and Cody Bellinger. I know you just got rid of Trey Mancini, but he wasn't really a factor anyways. Patrick Wisdom. Once he gets, you know, really healthy and back in that lineup, you got Christopher Morel, who's been really good this year as a rookie. Nico Horner,
at second base. I know I'm going to miss a couple of guys in this in that lineup, but I mean, Yan Gomes, is he still with the Cubs, right?
Yeah, he's still with the Cubs. Him and Barnhart are like the one and two.
And I know their catching hasn't been great this year, but they're still doing a good enough job to help at least help this pitching staff. So, and then you got guys that, you know, fill out a rotation, and Drew Smyly and Kyle Hendricks. But I mean, this is a team that, if you have Stroman and Steele in games one and two of the wild card series, that's a pretty good problem. That's going to be a decent problem to have if you're the opposition. Let's see, who would they be playing right now if the postseason ended? Because six would play. You're playing Milwaukee. If you're the Cubs, as the three seed, say they're just a three seed, you would be playing the Milwaukee Brewers, who they've played this entire year and know in a heartbeat what they do. So that'd be a pretty good matchup. And if you beat them, then who knows? Maybe, you'd have to play either LA or Atlanta, but maybe something happens with them down the stretch and they have to figure some things out. But yeah, I mean, it'd be really interesting if the Cubs, who we thought were going to be sellers and who we thought should have sold Bellinger for what they could get now and what they could sell Stroman for what they could get now, looks like they might have a fighting chance of being in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. And again, they're not in the picture just yet, but I mean, they're right there and they're the hottest team in baseball. You look at their offense. I mean, their offense has been the best offense in baseball over the last 10 days. Resurgent Cody Bellinger. You got Mike Tauchman. I mean, leading off playing center field, who would have thought, right? Just these guys who have just seized opportunities. And the Cubs got it right. That's what happens when you carefully pluck guys from other organizations or off waivers and whatnot. And you get Jamer Candelario back. The Cubs just won a series against the Braves. So it's like they got all the momentum. They got Adsele in the back of the pen closing games. So they got a shot at getting really hot. And I think it would be super cool. I mean, have Chicago back in the playoffs again at a rockin' Wrigley. That'd be fun.
And I mean, you have three teams right now within two games of the last wild card spot. And then if you want to throw San Diego in there, they're four games out of that last wild card spot. I mean, I really don't – I mean, well, maybe the Mets and Pittsburgh, who are 7.5 out, are kind of, out of it. But it could be a very interesting race going down the line because Chicago and Cincinnati are still going to play each other a couple of times this year. That's who's in front of Chicago right now. Miami's lost five straight. Maybe they can try to find a way to turn it on again. And then Arizona has lost six straight, so maybe they can find a way to turn it on again. But you're going to have a very interesting couple of weeks here because, we're at the beginning of August. You still have all of this month and all of September, and the Cubs are one game out. So you're looking at – and actually they were tied with the Reds because the Reds won and the Cubs lost. So the Cubs were at one point in the wild card before losing. I don't know who they lost to. They lost to the Mets 11-2. So
that's right. They had a bad loss last night.
So that's a case of let's stay the course. Let's try to keep playing around 500 baseball because that's what the Reds are playing right now. They're playing around 500 baseball. And who knows what's going to happen at the end of the season when you got to play each other a couple of times, maybe you get a couple of games in front of them and you never look back.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really exciting to see, that'll be the race to watch. I mean, the divisions are kind of going to be locked up towards, once we get another month in. The wild card is always interesting. That's why it's fun now. Expanding these playoffs were just a really good thing. I just like the Cubs' chances, man. I mean, that city of Chicago is crazy for the Cubs. I still, I say this all the time. I don't know how anybody who lives in Chicago is a White Sox fan. It doesn't make any sense to me. Maybe I'm in the wrong areas. I don't know. But everybody's just crazy about the Cubs, even 2.5 hours away. So, I'm definitely pulling for the Cubs here. I'm on the Cubs train. Do want to get into some other stuff before we conclude. quick little prospect note that you probably saw yesterday. Paul Skeens was assigned to the Florida Complex League after throwing a live BP the other day. So he will be pitching his first professional game at some point very soon. Excited to see how he does. Maybe he can get promoted really quickly, just like Dylan Cruz did. He played one game at in the Complex League. He went 3-for-3, saw three pitches, and they were like, all right, let's move him up. And did you see, by the way, that Dylan Cruz, who ended up homering in his second game for Fredericksburg, is the Nationals' low-A affiliate, they sold his Superman jersey at auction for $11,000?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess they were wearing a not alternate identity, but just kind of a commemorative, you know, like Superman-style jersey. Dylan Cruz right. obviously wore it, and they sold it for 11 grand.
Wow.
It's pretty neat.
I mean, that's – talk about having a buzz around your name. I'm sure Paul Skeens would have the same thing. But it actually reminded me, before we go back to some more prospect spotlights, I've completely forgot about this. So the Lance Lynn-Joe Kelly trade, the two prospects that were in that trade that went to the White Sox, Jordan Leisure, who went from the Dodgers to the White Sox, I played with and is one of my best friends.
Really?
Well, I don't want to say best friends, but
– that's cool.
He's one of my friends that I used to play Little League with and travel ball, and I played against him in high school, and he went to actually the University of Tampa before he got drafted in 2020. So it was – or 2021. No, 2020. Either one. But it was really cool to see his name, and even Jeff Passan kind of gave him like, hey, like Jordan Leisure's really good. He's got all these good strikeout rates. I think he had like a 10 or 11 Ks per nine. But it was pretty cool to see that, you know, somebody that you grew up playing with and against get traded for basically Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly. Like, he was one of the pieces that, like, hey, we need this guy, so we'll give you Jordan Leisure. And he's in AAA right now.
Yeah, pretty cool. That is pretty cool. Jackson Holliday's also raking for the Orioles. I think that's not an afterthought that he could
Or 20 of 51. The last time I saw
him. Yeah,
he just went 4-for-5 with a home run and two RBIs and scored three times. And oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like every level that this kid goes to, he just rakes. I mean, even in high A, like, he was just unreal while he was playing at Aberdeen at Ripken's place. But, yeah, I mean, I'm pulling up the stats right now. Overall on the year, he's hitting 342. This is across three different levels, by the way. He's hitting 342. In Double A, he's only played 13 games, and he's reached in all but two of them, and is hitting 396. So he's homered at two straight as well. So, I mean, I think it's just a matter of time. If you add him to the pennant race, if you're Baltimore and he could succeed like he has been in the minors, I mean, the Orioles are going to be a problem.
So now let me pose this question. Who do you think is up sooner? Paul Skeens, Dylan Cruz, Jackson Holliday. Which one of those three guys do you think makes the big leagues faster?
Holliday for sure. I mean, there's no reason why Skeens or Cruz are going to be playing in the big leagues this year. I mean, I think Jackson Holliday is going to be playing the big leagues. You know, I think he will be up at the end of this year.
Really? I think they're going to keep him down for this year.
If there's a role, just to get him to AAA. If there's an opportunity to bring him in and bolster the roster, like if there's an injury, like in September, they need a guy, I think there's a chance. I really do. But I think it's Jackson Holliday. I mean,
the only reason I don't say this year is because they don't want to start his clock, first of all. Second of all,
true. Yeah.
Maybe see how this season plays out, who they keep, who they don't keep. Maybe they keep a Colton Cowser and a Jordan Westberg, so that kind of locks up those positions right there. Whatever they do with Gunnar Henderson and Jorge Mateo. I think Jorge Mateo is gone after this year anyways. He might be a free agent. But see what happens and maybe see, you know. I think the biggest thing is they don't want to start the clock yet. because that guy, I think, is going to be so good that once his clock starts, it's not going to stop. And it's going to be the Manny Machado thing where you have him for 6 years and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with him, you know? So, but I definitely think he could be up next year. I think at some point in May,
we're talking
about the 20-year-old.
I think his projections are next year.
I wouldn't be surprised. But I think we could be in a scenario where in May and June, we're talking about Jackson Holliday, Dylan Cruz, and Paul Skeens making their MLB debuts.
Music to my ears. I mean, that'd be really cool.
So let me pose this question now too. Do you think three guys from this year's draft could be up next year? Wyatt Langford, Dylan Cruz, Paul Skeens. Just playing devil's advocate. They're 22-year-old college bats. They had, you know, really good college seasons. I know that's not going to always translate over to the minor leagues and to the pros, but if they have some sort of success the way Jackson Holliday is, do you think we could see all three of them up at some point next year?
So Skeens and Cruz, I do believe so. Langford is weird because Texas is just so loaded, right? And I think, and this is going to sound terrible, but I think if you're the Rangers and you're making another push for the World Series next year, like you could trade Wyatt Langford to get a freaking haul of a potential free agent back if you're really going to go for it. Now, I don't know if they're going to do that because, again, it's a number one prospect. But I guess the Rangers are built for now. They're in win mode now, you know? So I don't know. I think Langford might take a little while.
Do you think that he's either up with the Rangers or up with somebody else, you know, traded to just because we've been talking about him for Dylan Cease, who's going to have two more years of control after this year? You trade Wyatt Langford for him. You try to put Dylan Cease in that rotation with Jordan Montgomery and Jacob deGrom and Martin Perez, and you just try to make as good of a rotation as you possibly could.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it 100% being somewhere else. I really do, just because the way the Rangers are constructed right now, there's just no room for him to play. It's just not. And it's not going to be a Wander Franco thing where you call up Wander Franco and then you got to trade Willy Adames because of it. You know, it's just their roster's winning. I guess we go into some other quick ones. Brock Wilkins up in high A already. He had his first hit in RBI last week. And Wake Forest Justin Johnson actually made his high A debut here in Peoria this past weekend. So that was pretty cool to see that. It was bizarre. It was really odd seeing him in a non-Wake uniform. Similar style, you know, glasses on the back of the hat. But no, it's just cool to see like all these prospects that came from the College World Series are moving up pretty quickly. I mean, you got to think about it too. The College World Series, you bring up a good point on how these guys are going to get called up earlier. It's because they already have the experience of facing this velocity. So it's cool to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the most loaded College World Series that we've had in a while that, you know, basically you could have picked any name and it could have been a potential first round draft pick. I mean, we had four guys in Cruz, Skeens, Langford, and Waldrop. You had Braden Taylor of TCU. That's five.
Rhett Lauder, two.
Brock Wilkin. So that's seven already. First round picks. Who else? Dolander. Did he go in the first round? Right? He went first round, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's eight.
And Ty Floyd was picked 40th overall. I mean, it's not too far out.
Yeah, and you have other guys too in Trey Morgan III, who was picked in the second round. You got guys like Jack Caglione, who's going to be a first round pick next year. I know there was, so there's 8 first round picks already in the College World Series. I think there was another one. I think there might have been 2 more, but now I can't remember. Anyways, I mean, this was a loaded College World Series team, and that's one of the reasons why I think that you could at least see Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz maybe in September of next year, especially if Pittsburgh starts the way they started this year and they get off to a hot start. Maybe they call him up to try to be another anchor, try to be in that bullpen to help a David Bednar, if Bednar's still there, if he's not traded by this offseason, you know, or depending on, you know, who they decide to bring up and what they decide to do with that roster. Because I know McCutcheon's a free agent again. They got rid of Carlos Santana. They got rid of Rich Hill and Andrew McCutcheon. So, you know, but if they want to try to be how the Cincinnati Reds are this year, maybe they just try to call up everybody that they can. They try to get up Edny Rodriguez, and they have,
because then at that point too, you're going to get O'Neill Cruz back. So,
yep.
Yeah, that could be a thing where you kind of kickstart your organization by getting him back from injury.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it could be pretty interesting to see what type of guys get called up next year and if any of them are from this year's draft class. Because, I mean, we've already seen guys from the 2020 and 2021 draft class already up. I don't remember who was in 2022, but, you know, we could see them up pretty soon too. So, you know, it would be interesting to keep an eye on these guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we love it. You know, college baseball was exciting. These guys are now in the pros, so it's really cool to kind of see that transition. You know, plenty of prospects to go around everywhere. That's what I've got. Anything else you want to add?
No, that's pretty much all. That's pretty much all the excitement that's been around baseball these last couple of days. I mean, all the Angels. We could have a whole other segment about how the Angels have lost 6 straight since the trade deadline, and things are going nowhere. But I mean, that's basically just beating a dead horse at this point, where, you know, Ohtani's almost crying in the dugout, and Angels are giving up 6 runs to the Giants in the 9th inning. So, I mean, at this point, I think it is what it is, and I think
yeah. I mean, the only thing you really say about it is, like, exactly, what are you going to do? You know, there's nothing you can do. They made their decision. They weren't going to trade Ohtani. Is what it is. You know,
it's going to be a really fun offseason, especially if Juan Soto and Ohtani don't sign with their current clubs to see where they go. It's going to be really fun. You still got Matt Chapman too. That is going to be a free agent. You could have Marcus Stroman opt out of his deal and be a free agent. So yeah, bless you. I think that's going to do it for this episode.
Thank you,
Harris. I don't think I have nothing else to add. There's not a whole lot of other news I think that was worth talking about, other than what happened with the White Sox and what's going on with the Orioles. I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, nothing either. A lot of stuff that wasn't really on the field. So, you know, enjoyed that. Glad that Kevin Brown's back. And, yeah, hope the Orioles don't listen to our podcast, because then we'd probably get canceled. But, yeah, that's all I got.
So, and then next week when we do this again, we'll be another week closer to September baseball, which hopefully after this next 7 days or so, we'll have some more juicy stuff to talk about. Maybe the Cubs are in the wild card spot again. Maybe the Reds are making a push for the division. Who knows? Because that NL Central is kind of just up for grabs right now. But I think that's going to do it on episode 14 of The Young Lads. Harris Eisenberg, thank you for joining us as always. Peter DeFee saying so long, good night, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you're watching this from, however you're listening to it, you know, whatever time you're listening to it, we want to say thank you for listening. As always, and we will talk to you again next week.